Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, episode 153. Oh, goodness. Boy, it has been a week, kids. So the week started off, as you may have heard in me mentioned in another podcast, with a straight-up plumbing apocalypse, as I'm lovingly referring to it. Just massive infrastructure problems in our building, and someone moved out, and it changed the pressure and kind of the lines, and we started getting water coming out of our floor drain. Ugly, nasty situation. And so we ended up having to shut down the whole building, the landlord did, they're having to replumb all this stuff that affects several suites. And man, it's so my shop is that I run here in Denver has been closed all week, but just craziness and just threw everything into kind of weirdness. And oh goodness, and I just had like uncomfortable meetings and stuff about, you know, business and money and crap that I hate to think about. I'd rather think about ideas. Not a very practical person when it comes to that kind of thing. I'd rather just, you know, do what I do and hopefully make a living. So, more rain and snow for Denver, Colorado. My goodness. It's kind of doing that spring thing it does where it rains and it's snowing. Now it's kind of snowing, but it's not cold enough to stick. So it's kind of nice. It's just like having like wet streets. But I tell you what, people just lose their mind. They just drive like absolute morons. I've seen more wrecks just running a couple of errands this morning. I'm like, geez, goodness gracious, people. I mean, it's like you live in Denver, Colorado. You should be used to this by now. Calm down. Stop driving like a moron. All right, there's my rant for the day. Well, first of many. First of a couple, maybe. Had the lovely and talented Peter Zelasco over for dinner. We are continuing our quest, our big scheme to take over Catholic video storytelling and you know, find a way to talk to the masses in a language that they understand and tell some beautiful, interesting stories. So that project's coming along. Looks like it's going to go forward. So who knows? At some point, you might get to see my pretty face in motion. Oh, God help us all. I should start dieting right now. Because you know what they say. The camera adds 90 pounds, right? I mean, it's science. That's science, okay? Hey, speaking of science. Oh. Before we go to science and stuff that I want to talk about with some science-y kind of stuff here, my good friend Roger Thompson wrote a movie. He's written many things, but he wrote a movie, and it was called Beyond Sight. And he's part of a project called Walking on Water Films, and I think it's part of like Walking on Water Surf Camp, and they make these Christian films about surfing and about and they did this beautiful movie about this kid named Derek Rebello, I think is how you say his last name. He's a young poor kid from a coastal town in Brazil, and he was born blind. But his dad owned a surf shop and had, I think, maybe been a pro surfer. And his dad just like prayed before he was born that he would have a son and he would be a pro surfer. And named him after Derek Ho, the great surfer pipeline from Hawaii. And so this kid's name's Derek, and he's born blind, turns out. And so... But then this kid ends up learning how to surf, and this people are so moved and inspired by this blind kid who is obsessed with getting barreled at Pipeline. And the whole story is him kind of just all these doors opening, and he surfs with Laird Hamilton and Kelly Slater and Damian Hobgood, and he meets what's that girl's name? Bethany Hamilton, the girl from Soul Surfer, the young girl that got her arm bit off by a shark and came back to be a pro surfer. I mean, he meets all these people and goes surfing with them. Rob Machado, who, by the way, man, Rob Machado's hair has gotten... I haven't seen Machado in a while. Last time I saw Machado, he had kind of like the famous Rob Machado fro, you know? He was kind of famous for that Soul Surfer fro of his. My goodness, he's got like this big old curly bleached out from the sun and surf just like mane of hair that goes down like in the middle of his back. I had no idea. I guess I haven't been reading surf magazines much since I moved inland. But... I think that Rob Machado's hair is one of the great wonders of Western civilization. If you don't believe me, Google Rob Machado. but anyway, this kid, man, he just like he inspires all these people, and there's kind of a spiritual lesson, and he kind of has to have some humility in the end after he kind of goes to his head a little bit and all this. And it's anyway, my friend Roger Thompson wrote this, and they had it in select cities. And I should have promoted it earlier, and I forgot to do so. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. So I want to promote it now. I've heard someone said they saw it on Vimeo, so I don't know if it's online or what the deal is, but it's called Beyond Sight. It just finished, I think, its theatrical debut. They just kind of had one good solid week of it in the theaters. Several theaters around the country did a special release of it. Beyond Sight, I'm sure it's somewhere you can see it. And I'm not going to let a chance go. So at the beginning of Beyond Sight, there was a really great commercial for my friend Roger Thompson and his new book, My Best Friend's Funeral. And I tell you what, if you want a good read, My Best Friend's Funeral is a really incredible memoir, especially you Ventura types. If you're one of these Ventura types out there in Ventura County, Santa Barbara County, that area, this is a book that will just blow your mind, because it takes place in, and it's got so much about the South Central Coast and Ventura in particular in it. But it's a beautiful, beautiful coming of age and coming to faith memoir. And I cannot say enough about Roger Thompson. I just love that dude. He's such a good, solid human being, and his book is amazing. So really enjoyed going to see his movie last night, and I would suggest you go find a way to watch Beyond Sight, pick up My Best Friend's Funeral by Roger Thompson, and have a look at that. All right. So, oh man, I got kind of something emerging, kind of something. I don't know. Maybe it's just the rainy day, but I've just kind of been catching these different influences and different stories this week. And so two writers kind of entered my life. One kind of re-entered my life, and one entered for the first time in the last week. And I'm really stricken by both of them. And how to say it, it's kind of got me thinking. There's connections between those two and some other stuff that I've been hearing on the news and stuff. And I'm going to try to put a beat on this a little bit and just kind of, but this might be one of my crazy, I want to get everything that I've been thinking about. You've gotten reruns and interviews all week. So I want to give you a little commentary, a little musing. Some of you, that's what you come out here for. And this is going to be one of those where I'm not really sure what I want to say. I'm not sure how I want to say it. I'm hoping it will make itself known. But so one of these two writers was Eugene Peterson. Now, Eugene Peterson, I had known who he was. I knew he was taught up somewhere up north, maybe Canada, maybe Montana, something like, he's from up there somewhere in America. And he's the translator of that Bible translation, The Message. Now, it's depending on what you mean by translation. I wouldn't say, hey, make The Message your primary Bible and go study the scriptures, you know, using The Message by itself. It's not, it's more of a It's he tried to translate the Bible into modern language and just kind of the way we speak. And I never really read it. I just thought that the idea sounded so distasteful, and I thought, man, I hate stuff like that. And I'm picturing, like, you know, those bad youth Bibles from the 1970s attempting to reach street kids. And so they put, you know, Jesus into some kind of like he's talking jive or something, you know. I mean, that's I kind of put it on the better side of the fringe of that kind of a endeavor. And I was wrong. I was dead wrong about it. It's still, I'm not saying that it's like an accurate translation, though I think that if you're translating concepts and not actual words, I think it's fairly faithful to the original intent, especially in the Psalms. It's really fascinating to read them, the Psalms, in this translation. But anyway, the reason I got turned on to this is Bono and Eugene Peterson did a video for the new Fuller Studios project out of Fuller Seminary out there in Southern California. And it was a really interesting conversation about the Psalms, about the nature of metaphor, about the nature of art and how to live as artistically. Really, really better than I expected it was going to be. So when we get back, I want to chat a little bit about that, and I want to move over into some stuff from Peterson. So yeah, you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. So, I watched this video, and it's really worth, you can Google it. I think you can go to Fuller's website. I'm sure there's a link to it. If you just Google Eugene Peterson and Bono, you're going to find it. Maybe I'll try to get it up into the show notes, get a link to it. And I tell you what, it's really beautiful. So Bono, the lead singer of the band U2, goes up to this lake house in Montana and, meets with Eugene Peterson, and Eugene Peterson tells the story beforehand about how he's, you know, Bono had kind of sent a video letter to him and he didn't know who he was, and people were bringing in copies of Rolling Stone magazine and showing to Bono, was talking about Eugene Peterson's translation and how it had changed how he and the band read the Psalms and how they pray and all this. And he just had no idea who Bono was. He had no idea who U2 was. He's just an old pastor, Bible teacher, and translator that teaches at a college and doesn't market in those pop culture worlds. So they show up and they sit down, and it's just interesting seeing, you know. And just a side note, is it just me or is Bono, as he ages, morphing into the same person as Robin Williams? I mean, he looks like Robin Williams. I can't get over the look of old Bono. But I adore Bono. I'm a fan. I like the way he looks. I just didn't think he would end up, just see, every time I see a current picture of Bono, I'm like, really? That's how it landed? I'm just like, I don't know. He looks like, I don't know how to describe it. He looks like Robin Williams, but I love Bono. If you're listening, Bono, I love you. I'm sorry you look like Robin Williams. No, he's a good-looking dude. Robin Williams was a good-looking dude. Bono's a good-looking dude. Nothing wrong with looking like Robin Williams. I wish I looked like Robin Williams. I look like John Candy or something. I don't know. That's probably maybe a little better than I look. Oh, I'm cracking myself up. Oh, so many quotes from Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. So they have this beautiful conversation about art, and And I'm just going to let you go listen to it. He says some beautiful things. And I think my favorite quote is Bono saying that he likes David. He says, David danced naked before the truth. And his missus, you know, she wasn't pleased. I think it's spectacular. But they, and there's a great quote that Eugene Peterson throws out about David complaining and the full spiritual life and giving voice to the full life. And this is echoes so much of what we fought in the Christian music industry back in the early days of my before my reversion, and even after it, with my friend Kevin Clay and different people. We were just like wanting to say, no, come on. The Psalms was something we'd point to. It says there's a tradition of giving full voice to doubt and pain and anger and frustration and everything in the spiritual life. Why are we just making major chord songs to the good parts, you know, the high points? Come on, let's enter in, you know, to this whole thing. And so they gave, I just felt so justified in the end. Bono and Eugene Peterson were just saying all the same stuff, and I'm going, yes, my God, where were you in 1992? I guess Bono was being a huge rock star that didn't know the Christian music industry existed, and Eugene Peterson was probably teaching undergrads someplace and just pastoring a church. But anyway, long story short, really worth looking at. Really, really beautiful examination. But in that, he began to talk about the book Running with Horses, which I guess is a book about Jeremiah. So I went out and I downloaded for my Kindle the Message translation to read the Psalms in, and the book Running with Horses by Eugene Peterson. And I've kind of been reading. And I tell you what, man, I was just now in line for confession reading Running with Horses on my phone. And that opening chapter of Running with Horses, I think, is just something that everybody who is aspiring to be a God follower, someone who wants to try to live a life of something more than just self-promotion and acquisition and try to do something in this world, should read. There's a quote, the opening quote after a quote from Jeremiah in his translation is a big long quote from William McNamara that I think should be, it gives a voice to just the banality of our modern world and how unengaging it is, you know? And so, I mean, he basically asked the question, it's like, it's not that why are people wicked? It's like, why are they just so banal? Why? It's not that why are people bad? It's like, why do they live so just poorly and so stupidly? How did we end up where we don't even have good villains? We just have like crappy, petulant children masquerading as rock stars and actresses and famous people. And, you know, it's just fascinating. The opening section about what it means to be a human being, this kind of tension between trying to live a good life of excellence, but at the same time having humility and not becoming proud and making it all about you and thinking that it's all about you. And just, I don't know how to describe it. Anyway, your homework assignment, it's like $8 or something. Go download. If you're listening, go download Running with Horses, I think it's called, by Eugene Peterson. Because it's probably going to pop up. I'm reading it right now, so it's going to pop up on the show quite a bit because I'm being intrigued by it. So I'll probably do, I think I want to do a fuller segment on some of the questions that he raises. And before he sets out and says that, here, let's look at Jeremiah, I think he's kind of an answer. I want to ask some of those questions at some point, but for now, I'm just going to leave it in passing because I've only read it in passing on one swipe and just kind of, like, you know how when you read something the first time around and it's so good that you couldn't, if you were going to, like, get a pencil and underline it, you're just going to sit there and underline the whole thing over and over again. You're just going to end up with a Dayglo copy if you're with your highlighter, you know. So speaking of, another book that already I just read the barest little introduction of and read a few, just kind of dipped in, just kind of flipping through the pages and kind of dipping in here and there, is Art of the Commonplace by Wendell Berry. So Wendell Berry's kind of been the theme this week. A Kentucky author, farmer, agrarian philosopher, grower of tobacco. And so I mentioned getting this book and getting turned on to it by Zach Candler, a friend of mine, when we had brunch on Sunday. And then you heard the, if you listened to 152, the last episode, it was Adam Beach, and he tells a big long story about going to the house of and almost getting shot by Wendell Berry. Really spectacular story. That was a great episode. If you missed 152, go back and listen to the podcast. It's really probably my favorite conversation I've had on the show so far. Adam Beach is going to make frequent appearances on here. That guy is just a seriously interesting, thoughtful dude. I love that guy. So, yeah, but Wendell Berry, so I started reading just a little bit, just kind of just dipping in the art of the commonplace and seeing kind of this vision, this, and just, I read the introduction and I started dipping into some of the essays, and man, Wendell Berry just has this beautiful, beautiful picture of the whole and what it looks like if we would really act on our vision of the whole. He has this holistic kind of cosmological view of reality where he understands the in the context of metaphysics and revelation in scripture, what we know about God and what we can know about the universe. And it comes down to he lives it out by writing and by the way he grows things as a farmer. And it's just everything from the highest point of metaphysics down to here's how you rotate a crop, and it's based on the way we think reality is. It's just one of the most solid things. And so I'm going to be dipping into that book a lot and talking about it. Is The Art of the Commonplace by Wendell Berry. It's his agrarian essays. And it's funny, I grew up in a small town, but in town. So I had very limited exposure to farms. Like if I went to a friend of mine's house and lived out in the country, it was weird to me. It was a strange place. It was a strange situation. It was not what I was used to. I did not grow up fishing all the time and hunting all the time and you know driving a tractor or anything. We lived in town. My dad was a small business owner that owned a liquor store and was a mailman. My mom worked at Sears and ended up working at our store that we owned until they sold it. And after they got divorced and sold the shop, my mom worked at a photography studio and then an executive search firm that was there in a small town that worked nationally. So we weren't agrarian people by any means. And hay was in barns and animals and something was something that I experienced when someone threw a kegger in a field or in a barn party someplace. You know, I was in a rural area, but in town. So it's funny. It's like I'm as I dip into this more kind of like a lifting up of the agrarian is kind of an ideal. It's funny. It's kind of like my experience with hating country music while I was growing up, and now I love old country music. All the treasures that I didn't notice I had. But anyway, so let's go off to the break. When we get back, I'm going to try to find something coherent to tie this all together. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Rowley.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. Oh, hey, before I forget, we are saying goodbye today. Now, he'll be here all next week, but we're having an official mass and a party and saying goodbye to Father John Riley, who has been the pastor, the chaplain of the Augustine Institute for, I think, about 6 years. Definitely the entire time I've known the Institute in this second time around. He wasn't there when I was there for a semester when they were sharing space with the seminary back then. So they didn't have a chaplain. They had a whole seminary full of priests and teachers and stuff. But since they've moved away from the seminary for 6 years, Father John Riley has been there. And I love Father John Riley deeply. There's a lot of good men around our institute that have come through there. I think we've had a couple of saints, and I think he's one of them. And he beat me if he heard me say that. Luckily, I don't think he listens to this show, but he's the real deal. And he's heading off on an adventure to live the a Franciscan life. They're out in the middle of nowhere in the corner of the Las Cruces Diocese in New Mexico. He's a diocesan priest for the Archdiocese, I think, of Arlington, Virginia, and somewhere in Virginia, wherever Christendom is. He was a Christendom for a while, out in that area. He's going to just, I'm not sure exactly what he's going to be doing. He's going to be traveling around and doing some catechesis and teaching and helping out with some parishes, but he's just going to be living out in the middle of nowhere, serving some really, really poor parishes. And he's convinced this is what he's supposed to do. So, man, it's such a loss. He's been a good friend, a frequent confessor, says mass with a quiet, simple, real masculine reverence that is the kind of thing that could help turn this church around. I mean, it is. If he when he says mass, there haven't been a bunch of flourishes, but you have experienced the incarnation of the living God in the person, in the under the auspices of the Eucharist, there, in the Eucharist, you come away. He's an Irishman, a quiet, humble, mostly soft spoken, little brave heart of a man. And I love him dearly. And he's going to be a great loss to the Institute. So please pray that God brings to our Institute the pastor, the chaplain that he has for us. Because there's no replacing Father Riley. So I don't get choked up talking about Riley. Anyway, so we're about to go. I'm up against a deadline. We have to go to a picture, or a big picture, a mass, and a party for the good Padre today, later on. So Father John Riley. Pray for Father John Riley that God would move mightily through him in the boons of the Las Cruces Diocese of New Mexico. All right, so. Okay, I swear I'm going somewhere with this whole Wendell Berry thing, but I want to talk about a couple of articles and things I've heard or read in the last couple of days. So there was this article on, I think it was The Guardian in the UK, but evidently I am fascinated by this. I am just blown away by this. I'm like, what else have I not heard about? Come on, really? People knew about this? So evidently, they knew that this happened in animals. They just now have observed it in humans for the first time. At the moment of fertilization, when sperm and egg meet, there is in fact a flash of light. it's a zinc spark, they call it. And it happens every time. And they finally have caught it inhuman fertilization when they're looking at a tray that's prepared for in vitro fertilization, which I'm not a big fan of, just for the record. Wisdom can come out of darkness. And why am I not a fan? Because there's nine of them on this tray in the picture. One of them has the brightest spark, and they say that they now know that the brightest spark is the one that's going to be the healthiest, fullest fertilization, and that's going to make the healthiest baby. But those other eight, they're just going to do away with. So you're like, hey, look, we see a spark when life begins. There's life there. Yeah, we're just going to kill these other eight so that we can use the good one. I'm just like, Lord have mercy on us all. But it's just fascinating that, you know, it's like when there's, it's not very often that we have like a moment in nature that is a significant moment. And then at that moment, in case you would miss it, if you look closely enough, embedded as if to reward your search, is some fireworks or some like, hey, check this out. You know, it's like in the Eastern, in the Divine Liturgy, in the Mass of the Eastern churches, there's a couple of times during the liturgy when when the gospel is going to be read or something else is going to happen, and people can, you know, we're ADD, our minds tend to wander. And so written into the liturgy is wisdom, be attentive. Oh, here comes some wisdom. Hey, over here, come here. Hey, perk up, come here. No, look at me, look at my eyes. You know, we're all ADD. It's like, hey, look at this. Don't miss this. You know, and it's kind of like that. There's like this spark, a literal spark. Now, what's happening at that moment? What's happening at the moment that spark happens? You are seeing tissue. An egg is tissue. Sperm is tissue. It is more marvelous and more interesting and more encoded with all kinds of potential. But it is like hair or fingernails. It is tissue. It's not a being. I mean, it's a being, but it's not an organism. It's something that an organism has. It's things have tissue. They are, you know, organisms have tissue. They're not tissue. They themselves are not tissue. They have tissue. Right, it's like these little babies when they were in that Planned Parenthood sting, you know, they're getting fetal hearts and fetal lungs and all this. You know, tissue doesn't have lungs. Organisms have, persons, people have lungs, right? And so the difference between an organism, a living organism even, and tissue is stark. But it literally is a splash of a moment, and then this happens. And so this little tiny big bang where life emerges in this place, you know, is marked by this spark, evidently, which is fascinating to me. So what happens? So you have tissue and you have tissue. And then at that moment when they combine, you have an organism. Now, what do I mean? And a living organism. Now, what do we mean by life and what do we mean by an organism? We mean something that has tissue, not that is tissue. Something that is an entity, so to speak. Something that is. And it is it's something other than the two things that came before. But this one's living, right? This is, what do I mean by living? There's a good question. Well, what is life? What do you mean by living? I mean by living that it is getting larger in quantity and it is commensurately getting more complex as it gets larger and it's moving towards a fully developed form. So that dead fern that's dried up and blowing all over your windowsill because you didn't water it is dead. That fern that is getting larger and growing new branches and becoming, or that acorn that is split open and is turning into a sapling, that's alive, right? It's getting bigger, more complex as it gets bigger in relation, right? So is from that moment, from that spark on, that is happening in that thing. And I just love the idea that God embedded into the chemistry a literal aesthetic, hey check this out, hey pay attention, a little flourish, a little firework to make you pay attention to that moment. it's almost as if he knew that it, at the same time that we would figure out how to discover that would be the time when we would need to know that something is happening at that moment. So that's fascinating to me. All right. On top of that, I just heard a great a little there's a new book out called Spooky Action at a Distance. Now, I don't know if it's any good. It's a fascinating concept. It's about quantum entanglement. It's about, you know, and he, you know, and about that kind of thing. Now, I think he probably jumps off and makes some silly arguments like distance in space is an illusion. And I saw some reference in Neil deGrasse Tyson when I looked this up, and there's something on, somebody linked that something about it on Facebook. And one of the other little things they suggest when you're looking at that is Neil deGrasse Tyson says that it's almost sure that the universe is a projection or like a hologram or something. It's like, you know, it's not real. And I'm like, oh, good God, have a mercy on us all. But that is the reason I bring that up, is because you look at these things, you look at these. I want to talk about two things. I want to talk, when I come back, I want to talk about wonder, and I want to talk about kind of humility, and I want to talk about confidence in knowing reality. All right, so let's go to the break, and you are listening to The Counter Position.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so this is the Friday head soup edition. I got so many things I wanted to talk about, and I'm trying to put them together, but I'm trying to get a beat on them. But I guess the thing is that I'm seeing something. Here's where I want to put it together. I see something sane in Eugene Peterson. I see something sane in Wendell Berry. I see something less sane in this dude that wrote Spooky Action at a Distance and wants to question whether or not distance and space actually exists. I see something completely insane in Proud in Neil deGrasse Tyson and his weird scientism. And I see something just mournfully idiotic and just, I mean, just mournful. Something just shockingly stupid and just frightening in the idea that the same people who can see this spark that at this moment that life begins are doing this through a way that they're going to kill 8 out of the 9. But I guess, you know what, there are abortion doctors who have been sucking baby parts out of women and seeing that they have fingers and toes and heads, and they're actual, like, they look like little babies, and they sit there and they do 150,000 abortions. So, I mean, if they can go past the 150, you know, the hundreds of thousands of killing babies, then I guess a spark is nothing, you know. But I think that we've lost the ability to have confidence in being able, and common sense in knowing reality, and then being able to formulate some kind of an understanding of the whole, and that we can then encounter new information and new insights and even questions as beautiful mystery that inspires wonder and deeper search, but not just... You're looking. I think that modern scientists, to a great extent, you know, ever since Francis Bacon, have been looking for an excuse to cast off the occult, to cast off the superstitious, to cast off those occult causes of Aristotle, as Bacon called them. You know, that there's a toward which in any of this. There's a telos in Greek, that there's any teleology, that this stuff is, that this tissue is anything, that these chemicals in a combination is something, right? That things have a nature, that there is something. When you look at something and it's a dog, that a dog is something and it has a nature. And you can chop it up all day long. You can, you know, implant some udders. You can put horns on it. You can do whatever. But all you have is a mutilated dog. You don't have something else. But we've gone so far as to think that you can chemically abuse yourself with some weird hormones and hack off body parts or tack new ones on, and you can make yourself a man when you're a woman. Or so, and then we're going to then force that vision of reality, this weird Platonism, as there's something different, there's some big dramatic distinction between me and my body. We're gonna put that on to the world now. So I don't know. I guess I see a man like Wendell Berry, who understands that we are creatures, and we stand in relationship to a creator. And it would never occur to Wendell Berry that distance doesn't exist, because he knows that tobacco plants are something, and that they behave in a consistent way. They have a nature, and you put them a certain distance apart. He doesn't need Neil deGrasse Tyson to tell him something's an illusion, because he grows tobacco and then dries it out and smokes it in a pipe. He puts it to, there's some, he sees, a man who lives an agrarian lifestyle, when we used to live closer to nature, there was something, in some ways, I really lift up the Paleolithic is like this pristine picture of how man was designed to live, but that's without civilization. And there are insights into reality that one gets from planting and from animal husbandry that one doesn't get by hunting and foraging. You know, you don't, you learn something about plants by planting them and watching them grow, and you learn something about animals by keeping them and domesticating them and helping them become better versions of what they are. You know, you find this trait in this animal, so you breed this animal with this other strong animal, and you end up with better animal. You see how the nature becomes more itself. You see how things fall off from that nature too. You know, you learn something there. And I'm just, as I dip in and out of Wendell Berry, I just see a deep, deep sanity. And when I read Eugene Peterson in Running with Horses talking about what it means to be a fully realized person and what it means to live in a way that fulfills what you're supposed to be in this world before God, they sound deeply sane to me. And so I guess that's what I want to talk about a little bit. I want to talk about sanity. And I've said this a million times in the show, quoting, paraphrasing Frank Sheed, and saying that sanity is when the picture inside your head matches everything outside of your head that is not dependent upon your head for its existence. You know, so, and some of those things are invisible. Some of those things are eternal. Some of those things are bigger than you. Some of those things are, the reality is discovered, not created. And so you, in some ways, if something is truly real, then your perception bounces off it like spitballs off a battleship. Now, I understand that where it gets spooky and interesting with this article, with Spooky Action at a Distance, where there is, when you get down to the fundamental underlying level of reality, like in quantum mechanics and these quantum experiments, it looks like it's ergonomic to consciousness. It looks like you can affect an experiment by how you intend to measure it. I mean, it's like, but I see something like that, and that doesn't make me think, oh, well, our picture of the world is wrong, because I'm not playing with this purely Newtonian picture of the world. But, and I'm not playing with a purely Aristotelian picture of the world either, as far as that goes. But you look at something like that, like quantum entanglement, or, you know, the effect of intention on quantum experiments and stuff like that. And that makes me look at something like The Priority of Christ by Robert Barron, his big academic work, and the role of the logos in underlying our ability to know and interact with all reality and stuff. That makes more sense to me. It sounds all crazy, but it makes way more sense that fundamental meaningfulness, that reasonability, that understanding, that logos, that word through which all things were made, should be kind of embedded in the pattern of the underlying. That makes sense to me. That something that when you get down to the deepest level of even physical reality, it's not immune to the personal, so to speak. It's not just static and crystalline and impersonal. That consciousness and intention and will can actually play a role in that. That makes sense to me, because the true, the good, and the beautiful are what underlie reality. Wonder, what am I talking about today? I have no idea. Some days you get just what's going through my head. And I guess to sum everything up of this, there's all this stuff from flashes of light at conception to quantum entanglement to, you know, all these crazy beautiful things that science discovers. And then there's people who can look at all that and it doesn't throw them and make them go, oh, well, maybe reality doesn't exist, man. Maybe we should just do whatever we want, man, because, wow, man. I mean, that's just stupid. A man like Wendell Berry, just like looks like one of the most deeply sane people I've ever seen. And yet he's living kind of an agrarian utopia, an ideal in some ways that the hippies couldn't ever pull off, but wanted to. He's living his picture of the world out in practical application daily in the moment in the most human, fundamental, and practical ways. And I don't know, I'm a fan of that. And it seems, I guess that's it. I think we need a bigger picture of the whole. I think we need to have confidence in reality so we're not looking for a way out when we see something mysterious. And I think that people like Wendell Berry and Eugene Peterson and maybe even Bono these days are given to us, certainly Father John Riley, all the people I've mentioned today, are all given to us as pictures of heroic sanity in a world gone mad. Anyway, well, there you go. That's the counterposition for the week. Oh, man, this is probably one of the most ADD episodes I've ever done. But that's what was on my mind this week. So, hey, let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.